Hi, and welcome back to the Utajua Hujui podcast. Now, a quick word before we get in. Your girl, Aileen, has a little bit of a potty mouth, which means she does not mind her language and she speaks the fluent French, which is all to say that I understand that some people are a little bit uncomfortable with this language, so here's just a warning for you. If, however, you are not uncomfortable and you would like to learn about the world around you and capitalism and colonialism and just like all this fun shit with a dazzling, brilliant, and funny host, if I do say so myself. Keep listening. History, nah. See story, chulo day. Tom Boyer, Tom Lawyer, Court Goer, Tom Soldier, Intellects, my fighter, Tom Scholar, Top Scorer, Tom
Hello,
Leader.
And welcome Tom back Konya, to the Jewish Podcast. You want to know what song I miss, Karili? Mm-hmm. Or no, what song is, I think, maybe the greatest of all time?
You have to be very careful with the next words you say.
Bartender by T-Pain.
That's a good choice. Yeah, where's the bar? And who, in this context, who's the bartender?
Is it me?
Oh, please.
Yeah, it's me.
Please stop loving yourself too much.
Kwani!
Please.
Kwani, it's you.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Sir.
You'll be craving over my drinks.
Nah. But anyway, people have heard your voice. What is your name?
What is
your deal?
Is GK, aka Karedi Gare, aka Kagreatness, aka Aileen's favorite co-host. No longer the assistant host. I'm no longer the Robin. More like Batman 2. Batman, the one who looked cooler, like the Dark Knight. Like, I'm more the Dark Knight. She's like
George Clooney.
The one with the underwear outside the
trousers. Oh, Adam West? Adam West is the best, like, one of the fun, campy Batmans.
Did you actually try and say that Adam West is the best?
I was going to. I mean, if you went to camp and like it being ridiculous,
the third best,
yeah.
Batman. Fourth best Batman.
I'm assuming after the whole Robert Pattinson thing,
mm-hmm.
the movie, the list is now Christian Bale.
Absolutely.
Maybe Ben Affleck, but I'm.
Yeah.
I don't really care. Robert Pattinson.
Yes, two.
And then I don't know who's your number three.
No, watch
Michael
either.
Keaton.
George Clooney.
Really?
No.
He's like the worst.
I haven't watched any of them.
Okay.
But Christian Bale is the best, and I think everyone can agree.
Oh, no,
Christian Bale
he's
is
the best.
The best.
He's the best. He's amazing. So yeah, okay, let's just get into this. What am I drinking? My wonderful tea. I'm still drinking Creature Gold. Green
it's not
tea
cold.
And mint. It's not this thermos. Let me tell you the thermos that I have before me. I don't know what it's called. I don't know where it was bought. I don't know what brand it is.
The worst plug I have
but
ever
this
heard.
Thermos is sent from heaven.
No, it would be when we'd be working together. It used to be a thing. Whoever's going downstairs fills their thermos and fills
you
the
copy
other person's
my
thermos,
thermos.
Throws it down, and she would just drink hot tea the whole day. From by the time I get to the office, it's about 7:58. Or 8:30, she's been in the office from like 7:15.
Yes.
So when I meet her, she's halfway through.
One cup of tea.
Her first cup of takeaway tea, because I don't know if she's had tea at home.
Yes, I have tea at home.
So she's had tea at home, then she's on her second cup. Then by the time I'm going down for my first cup, that's around 10, because we used to do something before, like prepare for recording.
Yeah, third cup of the day.
So she'd send me for her third cup, which she'd sip through lunch. Then at lunch, get another cup. As in, it became so bad that when the office kettle died, she used to jump into the kitchen and boil her own water.
Why not?
With a sufuria.
I would make sure
illegally.
There's enough.
We're not even allowed to be
okay,
in that kitchen.
Okay, first of all, I asked the relevant people and they said fine, number
mm-hmm.
one. Number two, I also made sure there was enough water for everyone.
My goodness.
I boiled water for everyone.
And can you imagine the heat of January weather and she was still drinking tea?
I don't drink water. Water tastes weird.
Says the person drinking green tea. Peppermint flavor.
First of all, it's not peppermint, it's just mint, I think. I don't. Okay, moving on. I'm drinking green tea and mint. What are you drinking? Are you drinking anything?
I'm drinking life.
Oh my god, let's get drunk on life.
I'm drinking life.
I'm drinking rum. Okay.
I need to drink a little more of life. I'm thinking I'm too sober.
Don't be like me.
Con, you're not doing anything?
With what?
You're not enjoying life?
Life is interesting at this point in my time.
Mm-hmm.
Life is interesting at this point in my life, is what I mean.
Unfortunately.
So after, where we left it off was that Kenyatta had a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone freaks the fuck out.
And they split into Kanu A
and
Kanu
B.
B.
And Kamuei tried to prevent Boyer from ever being able to access the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was the first attempt, they pushed a constitutional amendment to raise the age limit for the presidency
mm-hmm.
from 35 to 40. At the time, Boyer was 37.
Mm-hmm.
This move was so nakedly petty and reactionary that when Kenyatta recovered, he was like, dude,
mm-hmm.
bro, what the fuck? Can you bring this back?
Mm.
And so he got Njonjo and Moi to revoke the amendment,
mm-hmm.
and kind of things kind of went like back to normal. But as Kenyatta's health got worse, they grew more desperate.
Like basically, every time a big assassination has happened in Kenya, look at the health of
Kenyatta. Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. So they tried again. Njonjo and Moi finally got Kenyatta's go-ahead to propose a new succession formula. Ironically, this formula would replace the one that Boyer and Njonjo had designed
mm-hmm.
together.
Mm-hmm.
In 1964, the constitution allowed the parliament to elect a new successor should the president die in office. This replacement would then finish out that president's term.
Mm-hmm.
Njonjo and Moi feared that Boyer's charisma and national-level charm would basically convince parliament to elect him, and they could not allow that to happen. So in this new amendment, if the president died, the VP would succeed automatically, and then this VP would finish out the rest of the term.
Mm-hmm.
Parliament was like, no.
Mm-hmm.
And they changed this proposal, and the final, what we ended up with, when this is how Moi became president, was that when the president dies, the VP succeeds for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
That is enough time to plan an election,
mm-hmm.
after which an election is had, and
mm-hmm.
then the new president
mm-hmm.
is assuming office.
Yeah.
Now, what's really funny about Njonjo's machinations and schemes is that there was a time where he himself backed Boyer for the presidency.
Mm-hmm.
According to Fitz D'Souza, Njonjo believed Kenyatta to be old and senile, and therefore
mm-hmm.
preferred Boyer, and Boyer was more his speed.
Mm-hmm.
In the early days of the presidency, Njonjo and Boyer also worked closely together.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to inspire this 180?
His personal ambition.
Pretty much, yeah. That's what it.
Njonjo thought he could deal with Moi.
Yes. And not Boyer. And not Boyer.
Yeah.
That's it.
Easy one to deal with is this Moi guy. He gets into office, he does 5 years, and the next thing, I'm president.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, the end result was that, not interestingly, because we all know what this is,
mm-hmm.
the end result was that Boyer had a target on his back.
Oh, yeah.
And funnily enough, like, he didn't really do much to like shake it off.
Mm-hmm.
After Arguing's Kodek's murder left his seat open in parliament,
mm-hmm.
Boyer, as the Secretary General of KANU
mm-hmm.
and the high-ranking Luo politician, was expected to lead campaigns and to mobilize Luo vote for that particular seat.
Mm-hmm.
Except when the time came, in 1969, Boyer kind of pulled a cap and said, nah, I don't think I will. And the reason he did this was that the candidate on the ground was not popular.
Mm.
And first, above all else, Moi is a pragmatic politician.
Yeah.
And he did not want to risk his political capital on a guy that the people themselves hated. He didn't want to take that L
mm-hmm.
for somebody else. But also, personally, and a guy called David Goldsworthy makes this argument,
mm-hmm.
that Boyer had already been so marginalized by KANU-A
mm.
and so thoroughly excised from the inner rings of power that he said no to helping them out because he wanted to show, see, you don't want me. See,
mm.
do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you'd never do that with people in power. Because when they realize, oh, I can do it myself, or you fucked me,
they're
going to come
for
you.
You.
They're coming
mm-hmm.
for you. And that's exactly what happened.
Because
mm-hmm. KANU lost this election. KPU, Odinga's party, won this election. And everyone blamed Boyer. They were like, you should have done something. You should have come in to help. And now that they all realize that he had nothing left to give because he's not helping them in elections anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And Boyer resigned in 1969. He was
mm-hmm.
like, I'm not doing anything. And later, he left the country in June of
mm-hmm.
that year. When he returned, he was assured that as a retired MP, he was safe.
Oh.
That nobody was going to touch a hair on his head.
Oh.
In essence, it's like somebody said, what could possibly go wrong?
Ay.
Do you want to know how long this assurance lasted?
1 month.
A week. Seven
I know he died in July. So I'm
yeah.
like,
it lasted.
So in June, he goes abroad. He comes back.
And he's told,
he's
you're
assured,
safe.
You're fine.
You're safe.
Within a week, he's
a
dead.
A week. And this is what happened. On Saturday, 5th of July, 1969, Boyer was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
And to be very honest with you, because I could not be bothered to paraphrase this account,
mm-hmm.
and also because David Branch did such mm-hmm. a good job of explaining it, like I don't want to mince his words.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to quote from his book. And this mm-hmm. is how he accounts the day's events.
Mm-hmm.
And I quote, "Early in the afternoon of Saturday, 5th of July,
mm-hmm.
about a week after his return, Boyer and his bodyguard drove to Semi's Pharmacy on Government Road in the center of Nairobi.
Yep.
Boyer parked his car outside the shop, which had already been closed for the day,
mm-hmm.
after the morning's
mm-hmm.
trade.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew the Semis well, and when they saw his car, they unlocked the front door for him. Walking the short distance from his parked car to the shop up front, he paused to speak to a passing friend, Barack Obama Sr.
Mm-hmm.
After a brief chat, Boyer said goodbye to Obama and entered the pharmacy. He greeted Mrs. Mohini Semi warmly, and
mm-hmm.
the two talked with the pharmacist before Boyer took his leave.
He was buying a lotion.
As he left, shots were fired and he was hit twice in the chest.
Mm-hmm.
His assailant jumped into a car and fled the scene, while
yeah.
Boyer fell without speaking. First into Mrs. Semi's arms and then onto the floor of the doorway.
Mm-hmm.
He was bleeding profusely and stopped breathing almost immediately."
Mm.
End quote. After this, an ambulance was called and it was not well equipped to help him out. In fact, the fact that this ambulance was so poorly equipped may have contributed to his death.
Mm-hmm.
So ambulances, a little bit about ambulances to explain this. They're supposed to help stabilize patients.
The work is to stabilize
before you
transport.
Can transfer. To a hospital. At least that's the way it works in Kenya.
Uh-huh.
I know in some other countries it's more of like focus on the transfer, not the stabilization.
Mm-hmm.
And which is why like ambulances have all this cool life-saving tech on board. Except the ambulance that came to pick up TJ was fitted with a certain device called the Rescue Air.
Mm-hmm.
This is a plastic accordion-shaped resuscitator that helps warm the body,
mm-hmm.
which is exactly what Boyer needed. You see, he had lost so much blood that he was experiencing a lethal triad,
yeah.
which is hypothermia, which is when you're cold as fuck, coagulopathy, there we go,
uh-huh.
which is that his blood was running
okay.
too much, and acidosis, which is like your body's too acidic.
Mm-hmm.
If he was going to survive this shooting, one of these things would need to be stabilized.
Mm.
And this is where Rescue Air comes in, because it helps warm the body, which
mm-hmm.
in turn helps the body form clots, which helps counteract the body's acidity.
Mm.
Except Rescue Air does not work.
Mm-hmm.
And the US knew this when it dumped 10,000 defective Rescue Airs into the Kenyan market in the 60s. They knew this.
Oh.
10,000
The Americans give a bit of help to killing their fallen hero.
It is not known if Boyer would have survived had these attempts worked.
You
will never know. But it might have.
Yeah.
It doesn't help to deal with hypotheticals.
Mm.
What we do know
mm-hmm.
is that he did not make it. And
mm-hmm.
that at the hospital, he was declared dead on arrival. He was 38 years old. He didn't even turn 39.
He didn't turn yet. Well, he was just about
to. He was about to.
It's a very interesting thing, because like, even like when I did my research before, you learn about his movement. Like
mm-hmm.
the room, there was this article that was sort of suggesting that he was followed from when he left his Lavington residence in the morning.
Yeah.
So he leaves in the morning. He lived on Convent Drive in Lavington, which is not too far from someone I know who lives there. So he was not alone. He didn't know he was alone. He goes to the office, and past James Gishuru Road, through Agwin Skodek to Vary Road, where they made a stop. Then he has breakfast at Panafric Hotel. Suspects parked outside. They wanted to shoot him at Panafric, but they hesitated because of a growing crowd. Then, approximately after breakfast, he travels to his offices. So, like, they're following him the whole time.
It was...
He gets there at about 9:30.
Mm-hmm.
So then he finishes, he goes into the basement parking of the building with his private secretary, who's Otiendo Nundu. He says bye to Nundu. So this is the time he says bye to Nundu and his driver, and drove himself to the chemist. And then that's now where
everything happened.
So can you imagine, like, you've come, you've just told me it's literally a week. And from the time on that Saturday that you leave your house,
you're being followed.
You're as in the die has been cast, you're dying.
You're going to die.
Yeah.
Today is the day you die.
And they're just watching you go.
Waiting.
Until now Nairobi Hospital comes, bang, dead.
So this, his death, is one of the lowest moments in Kenya's political history.
Absolutely.
When the Truth and Justice Reconciliation Commission held hearings in Kisumu,
mm-hmm.
One of our historic female MPs by the name of Phoebe Asiyo,
mm-hmm.
Was asked to give her testimony.
Mm-hmm.
And she was asked about like what the lowest moment of her political career was.
Mm-hmm.
And her response was, and I quote, "I think the most difficult was when Tom Boyer was gunned down along Government Road.
Mm-hmm.
That was the lowest in my life, and
mm-hmm.
I guess the life of many other people.
Yeah.
That was a man who gave all his life for this country.
Mm-hmm.
He was one man who championed the sitting down in Lancaster House to discuss the Kenyan issue.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one man who asked the warring sections to stop war. He was the one who persuaded the British. I think amongst all people, that sitting down on a round table was perhaps the best option.
Mm-hmm.
But that day, they shot him dead.
Mm-hmm.
Up to today, nobody has told us why Mboya was killed.
We will never find out.
And we will never know. And that is the end of the quote.
This is when you wish that Gen Zs were the ones in charge of government at the time. Because you know that Gen Z... I'm sorry, this is an insult to Gen Z.
I think it is. You're not sorry.
But I'm sorry if that Gen Z... Cause that Gen Z is probably going to later record himself saying how I murdered Tom Mboya, what I did, what I planned, how it happened, who financed me. Like, in this current climate... We satisfy our passion of needing to know.
Yes.
So that generation, they died with everything in their brains. Very few people probably knew what happened.
Very.
And they never talked about what happened.
So let's talk about what happened next,
mm-hmm.
after Boyer was gunned down.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. News spread fast.
Yeah.
Politicians, allies and enemies alike flocked to the hospital to see Boyer's body for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they were joined by GSU. And the police,
mm-hmm.
who upon literally the second they stepped foot in that hospital, they were fighting with the politicians.
Uh-huh. The politicians think you're part of it.
Yeah. But many of the politicians who came to the hospital were Luo,
mm-hmm.
and they were very quick to suspect foul play.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, the Kikuyus had been the ones to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So at the hospital, they were shouting anti-government and anti-Kikuyu phrases,
mm-hmm.
to anyone.
Mm.
Who would hear it?
Mm.
And then when a Kikuyu priest was called to administer last rites, because remember, he's Catholic,
yeah.
The poor man was yeeted out of the hospital like Lucifer out of heaven. And when Boyer's body was moved to his Nairobi home in Lavington,
mm-hmm.
any Kikuyu and government official who tried to pay their respect was basically, they met hands.
I think it's only one person.
Hands. Moy tried and his car was pelted with stones.
There's only one Kikuyu out of the whole process.
Who did?
Who was accepted. And I think he was our third president.
It was Kibaki.
Kibaki.
It was I really do think that somebody needs to write a Kibaki book that explains how he managed his relationships.
Somehow, Boyer dies, he's the only Kikuyu sort of accepted. Because I know you're going to get there, but like the funeral service.
Oh, it was a shit show. In fact, here we are. His funeral, or the Requiem Mass, was held on the 8th of July at Nairobi's Holy Family Basilica. I think the president
Basilica.
The president was there.
He tried.
For Easter. Everyone loved it. You know, this.
But the president was there this year for Easter.
Kenyatta, not Ruto.
Former president.
Yes.
Okay.
What I find really interesting is that 2023 is the year I learned that Uhuru Kenyatta is a Catholic.
Oh, yeah, very
staunch. I wasn't expecting it at all.
Very staunch.
It just doesn't compute.
They like also build a lot of like Catholic, what are they called?
Churches.
Yeah.
Whatever's.
Hi, editing me. So as I was editing, I realized what the word is that we were looking for. That word was cathedral. Cathedral. I swear, the way English has defeated me for this series, what?
Areas of worship.
Over 50,000 people attended this Requiem
mm-hmm.
Mass. Citizens, ministers, representatives, foreign dignitaries,
mm-hmm.
everyone came. And emotions were so tense that the government anticipated riots, so they deployed GSU outside of the church.
Mm.
When Kenyatta arrived, his car was pelted with stones
yep.
by over 200 mourners.
Mm-hmm.
And then GSU responded by beating the shit out of everyone and their mothers.
No, of course, that's GSU's number one.
See, it's called Fanya Fujo.
FFU, Fanya Fujo Wone. Mm.
And this is when all hell broke loose. GSU whipped out their batons and started beating people left, right, and center in order to like clear the area around the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
And all this was happening as the Requiem Mass was going on. Like, as you are... Like, as GSU is throwing tear gas
mm-hmm.
at mourners and as the masses, you are mourning your loved one.
And you know they were shouting, they were calling...
You could hear it.
Like, Dume.
Yeah, you could hear
Dume,
it.
Dume.
You could hear
it's
it.
Like a bull.
And mm-hmm. to make it worse, this tear gas, because it's tear gas,
mm-hmm.
it bled into the church.
Yeah,
So you were crying not only because you were in pain and you were feeling, experiencing anguish.
But you're being poisoned by
tear gas. But you're also being poisoned by tear gas at a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Now, plans, as a result of all this, plans to hold his body in state, which is that thing, the really weird thing that happens.
With really big people.
Where you go watch this person's dead body.
Yeah. It's actually impressive that they thought of him, because it's been done for presidents.
And that's it?
It's done for presidents. I think our king of opposition is going to get one as well.
Oh, yeah, Odings. For sure.
He's going to get one.
For sure.
I don't know if Jaramogi got one, but it normally happens for, like, the top of the top of the of politicians.
Top. So any plan to hold his body in state was quickly thrown out of the window.
Mm-hmm.
And the day after this requiem, on the 9th, his body was driven to Nyanza, which would be its final resting place.
Mm-hmm.
As the body drove through Dagoretti, the motorcade was stoned by a largely Kikuyu crowd, who felt the type of way that the largely Luo crowd at the requiem mass
mm-hmm.
had attacked Kenyatta.
Mm-hmm.
They took out their anger on Boya's body and the Luos who lived among them in Dagoretti.
Mm-hmm.
The Luos in Dagoretti were beaten and had their homes and possessions looted.
Mm.
But still, as Boya's body made its way across the country, hundreds of Kenyans came to pay tribute
mm-hmm.
where it passed them. And when it got to Kisumu, more unrest broke out. GSU and the police dispersed the crowds with tear gas. But 2 days later, Moya's body was finally put to rest on Rusinga Island.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Moya appeared before Parliament to blame the communists for Moya's death.
Wow, wow, wow.
His evidence
mm-hmm.
was that the Chinese embassy had refused to fly its flag at half-mast.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they must be responsible.
Oh, dear.
Because they feel no remorse.
So 1 + 2 = 66.
Is 66.
As, you know, you also, point you also thought, like when he was being transported to Rusinga Island, there was a rumor that all like, Kikuyus in the Nyanza region were moved to Kisii
yeah.
for like the day, just for your own safety.
In fact, later on, they began moving the Kikuyus out
mm-hmm.
of Nyanza, like moving them to other places in central Kenya because
mm.
of how tense things got after this man's
oh, yeah.
death.
Mm-hmm.
This obviously, Moy's accusation was ridiculous. Everyone knew it, he knew it, his mother knew it. But the question is now, clearly you think I'm stupid if you think I'm going to fall for this shit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think people are missing the point, because the point of this accusation was not for it to be believable.
Mm-hmm.
It was for it to be distracting.
Mm.
So that you're focusing on this as the government gets its shit together
mm-hmm.
and executes its cover-up. And the cover-up was already in motion.
Mm-hmm.
I think 11, 12-ish days after this, on the 21st of July,
mm-hmm.
A Kikuyu from Kiambu named Isaac
Nahasan
Jega mm-hmm. Njoroge was arrested at his home, and the murder weapon was also found in his home.
Mm-hmm.
Isaac had received military training in Bulgaria, where he spent 4 years learning how to be a soldier and also being a student.
Connecting that to the communists?
And no. He was sent by Kenyatta.
Oh.
upon returning to the country, he was hired as a KANU youth winger
mm-hmm.
and also a hired thug. Later, he would be recruited to handle dirty work for the intelligence services in exchange for amnesty for his previous crimes.
Hey.
Almost immediately, Isaac's arrest raised more questions than it answered.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, did Isaac act on his own or was he ordered?
Mm-hmm.
Isaac himself argued that he acted on orders and that therefore he cannot be held responsible.
Yeah.
And as he was taken away, he kept asking, why pick on me? Why not the big man?
Yes,
he did
I
what
remember
we
that,
were told.
The big man.
Yeah, he kept saying, the big
like,
man,
who's
big
the
man?
Big man?
Who's this big man? But he kept
and he
quiet.
He was supposed to say it.
He kept quiet. He
went
wouldn't.
In and he died.
Your head. Let me get there. We still have names to name.
Sorry?
But because he never told us who this big man was, it makes it very difficult to investigate.
Mm.
Not difficult, but like, Kenya police is...
Like, who's the big man?
Yeah, but like, when you're not really invested in finding out the truth anyway,
uh-huh.
if you're not really given a name or something
maybe
concrete,
he told them the truth.
What the historical record says, he said nothing. Or
oh,
rather,
maybe
he was
told
killed
in close,
before
in close, yeah.
he was able to say something in public.
Mm.
Now, because the goal is to shut people up, rather than to investigate the truth and come to some sort of justice,
yeah.
you can imagine his trial was handled
terribly.
It was a piss poor trial.
Mm-hmm.
So he was tried before a Scottish judge, by a man by the name called Judge Simpson. And the outcome of the trial was already a foregone conclusion. Chief Justice Kitili Mwendwa told British diplomats that, and I quote, he had no doubt that it would end with the conviction of Njega.
Mm-hmm.
The trial lasted 8 days.
Mm.
For reference, criminal trials take months.
Yep.
Months. 8 days is a joke.
Mm-hmm.
In the trial, the state's prosecutor, a guy called John Hobbs, even admitted that it was fairly clear that Njega was acting in the agent of a conspiracy,
mm-hmm.
but that also Njega himself is guilty. Because
mm.
they argued he fired the gun.
Yeah.
So on the 10th of September, Simpson found Isaac guilty, Njega guilty,
mm-hmm.
despite the fact that the state could not prove Isaac's motivation and that he was the one who actually fired the gun. They
mm.
tried, but they couldn't prove it,
mm-hmm.
not to the beyond a reasonable doubt standard.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, Isaac was sentenced to death. Interestingly, upon hearing the outcome, Isaac left the court smiling.
Laughing, yeah.
I genuinely thought this man thought this big man was going to come save his ass, as if he doesn't understand
yeah,
how
just,
big men work.
You know, sometimes if you're that sort of guy, I think you've played the game, you realize, oh, I have been played.
Yeah.
And you just smile and laugh and say, okay, my
I,
time's done.
You accept it. You, ex-
mm-hmm.
you greet death like old friends.
Yes, that is
like,
the Harry Potter.
Thank you. I knew you'd get it.
Friend.
I knew you'd get it.
Yeah.
So on the 8th of November, Isaac was hung, Njega, sorry, was hung
mm-hmm.
for his crimes, alleged crimes,
mm-hmm.
on Jojo's orders.
Mm-hmm.
But still, he kept sticking to his story
mm-hmm.
that he was just the small fish, that somebody else needed to have been
mm-hmm.
gotten. Like, he, it's not his fault.
Yeah.
He even told his hangman, Kirugumi Wawanjiku. That was the name of his hangman.
Mm-hmm.
Njega told Wanjiku that he merely provided logistical support.
Mm-hmm.
It's not him. He was just a victim.
Mm-hmm.
Still,
he was just part of it.
His claims were never investigated, have never been investigated.
Apparently,
and I'm pretty sure right now it would be difficult to investigate them.
Apparently, when Jonjo ordered his death that day, it happened so fast
yeah.
that like the priest
was
not
was
even
not in,
present.
Yes, yes. And that's actually where we're coming to next.
Because mm-hmm.
that the fact that Jonjo signed the orders and the fact that it was so quick has led people to conclude that he's the one that planned everything.
Mm.
Even the British High Commission in 1973 alleged that Jonjo, and I quote, more than probably had a hand in the death of Mboya. He was Kenyatta's guy. And by the late 60s, he was the state.
Mm-hmm.
He controlled the state.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if he didn't plan it, he definitely knew something was happening.
Yeah.
There's no way he didn't cross his desk.
Mm-hmm.
And then he just figured, you know what, let me just clean up other people's messes. Because it was going to implicate him in some way. But eventually, the British... And the fact that, like, this idea of Jonjo being the ultimate perpetrator, the big man in charge, never really left.
Mm-hmm.
It has remained in the public consciousness
yeah.
ever since.
Mm-hmm.
But the British also thought that Charles Rubia was behind it as well.
Yes, yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Because Rubia was Mboya's immediate competitor after Odinga. They both were fighting for the post of KANU GenSec
mm-hmm.
and for Mboya's Nairobi constituency.
Mm.
Additionally, sources close to the police investigation initially made it very clear that Rubia was a prime suspect. However, by the late 1960s, Rubia was also seen as a threat to the government.
Mm-hmm.
He was wealthy, charismatic, and popular, and he also pissed off Kenyatta by interfering with Kenyatta's sister's race for Nairobi mayor.
Yeah, I think he won.
Yeah, he pissed him off.
And also, what is so interesting about hearing that Charles Rubia was a suspect was that fast forward like 10 years and Charles Rubia was the second to Kenneth Matiba in the race. Like, so Saba Saba, all the torturings that
yeah.
happened to Kenneth Matiba were happening
to
Rubia.
Him.
Very interesting.
But interestingly enough, like, the way the British intelligence interpreted all this information
mm-hmm.
was that they argued that Rubia was not the guy who planned everything, but he was supposed to be the fall guy.
Mm.
But, you know, this was quickly abandoned.
Inside.
And all mm-hmm. fingers, everyone,
mm-hmm.
pointed at the Kiambu Mafia. The Americans, the CIA, mm-hmm. the British, everyone was like, nah, the CIA, like, the, what's it called? The Kiambu Mafia was the one in charge.
The Gatondo Group.
With this, of this. And I don't know, like, what do you think? We don't know enough to...
It's really hard. Because, like, as you've just broken it down, Tom Mboya was a threat to so many people. We've all sort of accepted that the writing was on the wall that he was going to be our next president. So, Were the Gatondo Mafia happy with that? No. Does it make sense that Charles Jonjo was involved? Number one, Charles Jonjo, across the board, passed away with a very complicated legacy. Like, there's some things that people really loved him for. They loved his bravado and that he got his suits done in the UK and all that. But his legacy was still so complex because everyone feels that in that 60s and 70s period, the power he wielded and the actions he took were very dark and very selfish.
Yeah.
And so if he was backing Moi, and he sees Mboya as the biggest threat, and this guy called Kenyatta is always sick, it kind of makes sense that the Kiambu... It doesn't make sense to me that Jomo did it. Does it make sense that his people did it?
Yes.
Yes.
But not
Does it
Jomo.
Make sense that Moi did it? Yes. Does it make sense that anyone else did it? Absolutely. Jomo... The death of Tom Mboya was a consequence of succession politics.
Yes.
I think that's the one thing we can all accept.
Yes.
That, damn, if you want never be the succession guy in a new state, please, don't be one or number two. Go for number five.
Go, yeah, be number five.
Later!
Have those other bodies be in front of you. Remember, remember, if you're ever caught in the woods with a bear,
mm-hmm.
your goal is not to outrun the bear.
No.
It's to outrun your friend.
Yeah, yeah, you outrun the next person.
Yeah,
so,
no.
All of these guys, JM, Tom Mboya, and many others who struggled and suffered and were beaten and whatever, especially, were a consequence of succession politics.
Compare this assassination with the JM one we talked about in the last two episodes. Like,
mm-hmm.
yeah, because you made the argument that, like, the Tom Mboya one was so, everything was handled so well
mm-hmm.
that it had to have been, like, preordained or
orchestrated. Premeditated.
Yeah,
yes.
Premeditated. Whereas the JM one was such a
it
shit
was
show.
A mess. That one, the way you broke down that thing for me, I was like, oh my God. Okay, so the JM one was clearly an accident.
Like, JM was meant to die, but not like that.
Maybe later.
But not then, yeah.
JM, that's the thing that everyone asks. Like, his star was rising, but was he in the line to be a threat to any of these guys?
I think in murdering him, you confirmed how big of a threat he was. That he was bigger than you. You gave him more credit than
he actually
deserved.
You gave him more credit than he actually had at
yeah.
the time. So he could have become a threat to the next generation of Kikuyu leaders.
Yeah.
But he wasn't a threat to Jomo.
No.
Jomo, he was an ant in Jomo's presence. So you wonder, now it makes sense that, yeah, they were being they were threatening him, they were not letting something happen. They threatened, he got a bit aggressive, guy took out gun goes off, oh my God, he's dead, now we need to cover. I'm paraphrasing what
you
said.
You hit the nail on the head, you hit the nail on the head.
Then we need to cover up.
Yeah.
While Tom Mboya, you can tell it had the support of high-level officials. Now, it's almost certain that this guy, Nahashon, he could have done it.
I think he pulled the trigger, but he didn't plan it.
Yes. He was made a scapegoat.
Yeah.
Where he easily could have been able to kill him.
Yeah.
But there's no reason he would do it for himself. Looks at it, they're like, we can't implicate cops.
Mm-hmm.
We can't put them in prison because that just implicates us.
Mm-hmm.
So who do we implicate? This guy, who is known as a thug, a petty thug, who we use for intelligence things and dirty things, put him in. Because he can't snitch, really. He won't snitch. And his world just goes like that. So,
yes.
Nahashon, and the way he died was so... 2 months. Normally, people are in death row for years. It's him and Hezekiah Oyugi. Was that his name? The head of the... attempted coup of 1982.
And then also the assassin for Warihyo.
Senior Chief Warihyo.
Mm-hmm.
They were all killed incredibly fast.
Very quickly.
Which makes you think, And then since the coup, I don't think we've had another killing.
Actually, in 1987, I think Justice Mumbi
mm-hmm.
something put a moratorium on the death penalty. So
yeah.
It's still in the books, but it just... We don't use it
we
anymore.
We do not use it. But there are people on death row, but they're just on death row.
Damn. Anyway, so do you want to talk about what happened after the funeral, the trial, the everything?
Sure.
So, ethnic tensions. The answer
really?
Is, the answer is ethnic tensions.
Oh my God, I'm so surprised.
So Kikuyu's living outside of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
the 10 Gama counties.
Mm-hmm.
were targeted, sometimes murdered, and definitely forced out of their homes.
Mm.
In response, Kenyatta consolidated Gemma's support through the 1969 oath. Quoting from Daniel Branch, and I quote, "Oathing ceremonies had begun earlier in the year, but accelerated after Mboya's murder. Through 1969 and into the early 1970s, Kikuyu, Embu, Meru, and Kamba were taken in their thousands to Kenyatta's home.
Mm-hmm.
One estimate suggested over 300,000 people were transported to Gatundu. According to one account, they swore thus, the government of Kenya is under Kikuyu leadership, and this must be maintained. If any tribe tries to set itself up against the Kikuyu, we must fight them in the same way that we died fighting the British settlers. No uncircumcised leaders, i.e. law, will be allowed to compete with the Kikuyu. You shall not vote for any party not led by the Kikuyu." End quote. This was, I'm pretty sure you guys remember this oath, because it made it's reared its ugly head in the 2022 presidential elections.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it had to be taken back to allow people from the Gemma to support Raul.
It's a crazy oath. And also, the funny thing about the oath, people think that people just went to Jammu.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them did not go willingly. Like, many
of
the leaders
were
who were taken to stand before Jammu and make this oath, they thought they were being invited for lunch.
Just regular
tea.
They
thought doing, like, regular things.
Mm-hmm.
And then they arrive, and there's the oathing ceremony, and they're being forced or being pressurized into taking these oaths, which many of them didn't believe in. Like, guys like Jonjo, would they really believe in that?
Not really, because this just smacks of, like, Kikuyu nationalism in the worst possible way. Because it's weird that you believe that you have such a right to this country that you will die to defend your right to lead it. Not to be a citizen, but to dominate it.
I think it got to a point of, this was a response. Remember that also, Jomo Kenyatta, after the 60s, had never stepped foot again in Nyanza.
Yeah.
Because of...
development also, no money went to Nyanza after that.
Because of what Odinga sort of embarrassed him. And from that situation, he never went back. Many people died the last time he was in Nyanza. So he got a hatred, because he really thought, and this is what happens with those first leaders, you think you're nationally loved, and then these pockets of people start to pop up and go against you and develop followings, and then you get hurt that people want you out, people want to throw you out, people want to kill you. And then all of a sudden, once your eyes open to that fact, what happens is you become defensive.
Yes.
And so Jomo became defensive. I need to protect mine and my own.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about the rest of these people, because clearly they don't care about me.
Yes.
And boom.
Do you, in the 1960s, for this oath in particular, I mean, it doesn't, this is a hypothetical, but would you have done it? Assuming you had a choice? Assuming that if you said no, it would be respected? Would you say yes?
I don't think so. Not because I don't believe in, like, the Kikuyu identity, but I also believe in inclusive politics to an extent. But I don't believe we would have had a choice. I believe my family, my relatives would have all been taken there thinking what would have been then swept in. I do believe in a number of things. I believe in some of the struggles that Mama did, some of them. I don't believe in all of them. I do believe in Kikuyu nationalism, but to the point in which we're saying that we shall never be led by another leader that does not come. They used to call it, before when it was just Kiambu, they'll never cross the River Chania. I think that's an extreme level that can never happen in a growing nation. It's still a scar on our country's back that we have never had someone who is not Kikuyu or Kalenjin be president.
It's
still a scar.
I don't think that, for me, it's not that scar, right? Because we had, as a nation, we had the opportunity to elect somebody who was not Luo, sorry, who was not Kalenjin or Kikuyu, like somebody who could have actually won and actually governed
and
like done it, and we didn't.
Yeah.
So at that point, it screams to me like we were presented this opportunity to change the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
To expand what it means to be a president in this country.
And we flipped it off.
And
we
did
the middle finger.
Yeah, so it makes you wonder, like, have we been manipulated to think a certain
Absolutely.
Way? Or was the election stolen?
I think, I don't believe the election was stolen. I think it's the beauty of politics and political narratives, because what happened is that's a narrative that they didn't stick on enough. 2032, Kenya will be 69. I think it'll be 69.
Sure.
Will it?
Yes.
Yes, we'll be 1 year from being 70. If we go with the trend that Ruto is going to do 10 years, it means that the Kikuyus will have done a total of 25 years, something like that, while the Kalenjins would have done a total of 24 years to make 69. Nothing else. The rest is 0000000. And it's a fact that what was used to tackle it was this hustler thing. That no, it's actually a thing of hustlers, or that Raila's an evil man. But we are going to, and this is just a point of discourse, I think we're going to hit a very curious point in our nation's history where we have to address the elephant in the room. And the elephant in the room is that, yes, the Kikuyus are the biggest tribe by a huge margin, but there are others. And if they don't receive power, where are we leading this nation to?
Do you also think, because as you were saying that, like another thought came to mind, it's this, as a, I guess a Gamma nation, the next generation, people like you and me, it's not that we don't see tribe, it's not that we're not aware of it, of the way it's impacted our lives, but it's more that we choose to work beyond it, to work around it, to build connections and bridges with people who are not part of our communities. And do you think things will change once we enter once our generation?
I think we'll be forced to see tribe. Not by our parents.
But by the nature of the system.
By the reality of the situation. Because what is going to happen, and this is just a random hypothesis, is that at a point, a Gemma person like Aileen White, like Aileen, you don't like me saying the full name, Aileen,
thank you,
will run for president, and she will be rejected based on the fact that she's a Kikuyu.
Yeah.
Nothing else. So even though you try this nationalist thing, you will be rejected based on the fact that you are a Kikuyu. And it's a consequence of history. So I think we will be able to look beyond it, but still there'll be this narrative, this lingering narrative that will come between every political class until the chain is broken, that a Kikuyu can't believe in non-tribal politics. They can't, because they have been the benefit, and this is partially false, but they have been the beneficiaries. It's also largely true of a system that has chosen to keep them in power for the entire history of our nation.
Of our nation. It's why I consistently ask you, are we the right people?
I'm not going to say that, because I'm very happy and proud of who I am and where I come from.
Nobody's asking
and
you to denounce...
I'm not apologetic.
Yeah, nobody's asking you to denounce it, but I think it's... When I ask that question, it's more like, do we, like white people in the US and in, you know, Europe, have to reckon with our with the roles our community has played in the history of this country and what it's meant for everyone else?
You can only take it if you take all sides of that story. Because if it were not for the struggles that many of the Gemma people did and Gemma leaders were put in, where would we be today? It's also, you can look at the negative, like Gemma has had negative impacts on the way society works because of being selfish and going for Gemma. But also Gemma has done a lot in fighting for the country. Gemma suffered the most when it came to colonialism. Those are true things that we all sort of brush over. But I just implore Gemma people to think long term. Yes, you want to keep Gemma and the Kalenjin together now, but think about your populations. Think about your children. They may never be allowed to run for president based on the fact of their tribe, because of the way the tribe has organized itself for the last 60 years.
Okay. There's a lot I want to unpack there. I think the first one being is I don't know if it's true that we suffered the most. I would argue people of the coast definitely suffered some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Even the guys in Kisii, that area,
true,
the Kalenjins.
True.
In my James Finley episode, I talked about how the British orchestrated a genocide against a particular subset of the Kalenjins so that they could get their land.
Yeah.
So I think we need to get away from this rhetoric of like oppression Olympics, of trying to figure out who suffered the most and therefore who, and that suffering therefore gives you a much bigger claim to the country.
But it's also the exact opposite, isn't it, as well?
That what?
That then you shouldn't also going from who benefited Olympics as well.
Exactly.
So you just have to go to ground zero, because yes, Gemma did benefit.
Like, unfortunately, yeah, mm-hmm. like...
Mm-hmm. But also Gemma is the biggest population in the country.
Like, for now.
Yes, there's some populations
coming. Our people are not reproducing.
The Lula Nation.
As a Gemma woman myself, it's not my fault. I mean,
It is your fault. Why don't you have three by now?
For example. And also, interestingly, increasingly, a lot of Kikuyu women are, like, dating outside of their tribe.
Hey, what are you guys doing?
So even, like, our children...
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they're Gemma.
But they're not Gemma.
But also not fully Gemma.
Exactly.
Especially
because of our tradition. So they're like, if you marry a Kamba, we'll call your child a Kamba.
Yes.
If you marry a
with the exception, no. With the exception of, like, if they're from, like, a different race.
If it's a different race, then it's complex.
It's complex, but the...
We sort of leave them be. Like,
My understanding has been that we will invite you into the culture as much as you want. But
yes.
It's there for you.
It's also like a mirror sort of thing. You get there, but you never get fully there.
I think.
My whole idea is that Tom Mboya was a national hero. He did a lot of great things. I think people also tend to forget that he also is a man who played the game.
Yes.
And I think that's the part people need to understand the most. He played the game, and he played it to excellence. The way he took care of the Odingas was wow.
So I suppose,
mm-hmm.
our finishing thought for the Tom Mboya assassination thing is don't hate the player, hate the game.
I'm gonna let you say that.
But it's the truth.
But it was the game.
Unfortunately, that's how the game of politics.
The game of politics was really nasty, and he is the one. He is the one assassination that was definitely big enough to change the presidency. All the others, Pio Gama Pinto, Agwin Scodek, J.M. Kariuki, Robert Ouko, all of them were smaller players in the game. Tom Mboya was going to be our president.
He was going to get shit done.
Mm-hmm.
And on that note, goodbye, Karelian. I will see you for the next assassination.
Which might be Argwin Scodek.
Mm-hmm. I need to bring you on for something light. Or it might be the labor movement episode, considering my timings for this.
You're doing a whole episode on the labor movement.
The role of labor unions in our independence for Labor Day, naturally.
Oh, Makan Singh. Mm-hmm. Make sure you read on Makan Singh.
I will try.
Please.
I will try.
He was a great unionist.
Goodbye.
Fairly well.
Okay, just go read a book or something. Bye.
No one is going to read a book.
Tom Mboya, Tom lawyer, court goer, Tom soldier, intellect, smart fighter, Tom scholar, top scorer, Tom leader, Tom konya, cause these new niggas can't lead us.
Thank you so much for listening to the Utajuo Hujui podcast. I really appreciate you giving me your time of day. I know that your time is very valuable. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me on Instagram at utajuohujui.pod. That is at utajuahujui.pod on Instagram. Please don't forget to like, share, review, do all the nice things. I could really use the boost. Okay, enjoy the rest of your time on this planet. Goodbye.